Welcome to Episode 30 of Practical Defense, Hurricane Preparedness with Bonnie Gage, Part 1. Welcome back to another episode of Practical Defense. I'm your host, Alex Addicks. And to start off this episode, we have a special guest, Bonnie Gage. Welcome, Bonnie.
Hi, Alex. Thank you very much for letting me come on your show. I'm a big fan.
Well, thanks, no problem.
I listen to you on my commute on my way to work, and I have a complaint. My commute is an hour, and your show is only about half an hour long, so you need to double the length of your show, please.
Maybe I'll start playing some music or something. Fill in the time. This week, we are talking about hurricane preparedness. As Bonnie actually explained to me, that the hurricane season is from June through November. So it's actually still going on. And Bonnie here actually just went through Ike. She's actually a resident of the Gulf Coast, a lifetime resident of the Gulf Coast. So she has a lifetime of experience getting prepared for these types of things. And she sent in some fantastic notes on how to prepare and keep yourself safe during a hurricane. And rather than me just read them, we decided we'd just have her on the show.
Thanks very much. You know what? That's exactly what I thought you would do. I thought, well, I'll send you these notes and you'll use them for a show. But I shouldn't have written so many, I see now, because I'm on the show.
Yeah, well, you get what you ask for.
No. All right.
So, also in her day job, Bonnie is a medic for the U.S. Army and has, as we spoke earlier, 17 years in now.
Yep.
I'd like to thank you for your service.
Thank you very much for saying thank you.
All right, well, we'll be right back and get into the program. Welcome back. And now, Bonnie, the list that you put together, you actually had broken up into several sections.
Yes, because there are things that you do at the start of hurricane season, and then there are things that you do as soon as you see that there's a hurricane out there. Even looking at your town funny. They call that the cone of uncertainty in hurricane speak. God, that's what I love so much about living along the Gulf Coast is that everybody speaks hurricane.
Really?
Yes. Wow. I mean, I could call someone from, you know, the Midwest and try to have a conversation with them about the hurricane and they just don't get it. They don't know what, you know, they don't know what jogging is. They don't know what the cone of uncertainty is. They don't know what the clean side of the storm is versus the dirty side of the storm. Everybody that lives along the Gulf Coast speaks hurricane. It's the hottest show in town as soon as you're in that zone that the hurricane might hit you.
Wow. Yeah. Cause I've actually never heard those terms before. I grew up and have spent my entire life here in Southern California. We deal with fires, floods, and earthquakes, and we don't have such fancy terms. We have broken, destroyed, knocked down, broken, you know, things like that.
Broken, destroyed, knocked down, and broken. Got it. Well, anyway, my biggest note to myself and to, because I was asked by my family and friends to make notes about what I did this hurricane and about what I do. Really, this is what I do every year to get ready for hurricane season, because you're not always going to get hit. The last time the Gulf Coast really got hit this badly was in 1983, I think, by Alicia. And then before that, it was in the 70s by Carla. And everybody that lives here that's been around a while, they still talk about those hurricanes. And they're going to be talking about Ike for a long time, I can tell you. But the first thing you need to remember is that the time to prepare for the hurricane is not during the evacuation, and it is not the day before the hurricane. The time to prepare for the hurricane is at the start of hurricane season that runs June through November. Your kit is going to last you all year long. And what I do is I get one of those giant tubs, you know, with the big galvanized tub. I put it in there, and then I put it in the back of my closet, and I forget about it. And I don't drag it out unless, you know, something like this happens, which this year I finally got to use it. I was actually a little bit stoked about that. I finally got to drag my hurricane kit out of the closet. Yay.
Fortunate, but unfortunate.
Yeah, it was. It was, but I was really, really thankful that I was so well prepared. Also, like, my sister is a single mom and she doesn't have a lot of cash on hand. And you know what? Right before Hurricane doesn't care if it's payday or not. So you're really doing yourself a disservice if you prepare for the hurricane in the day before the hurricane. It's a good idea, like in April or March, whenever you get your tax return, to take about $200 from it and put your hurricane kit together then. I mean, what else are you planning to do with your tax return?
Well, lots of things. Buy new TVs, buy DVDs, go on vacation, have a nice dinner.
Yes, but reserve just a little bit of money to put that hurricane kit together if you live in one of the hurricane-prone areas. California doesn't get that sort of thing, right? It's an earthquake and fire area and flood area, right?
Yeah, but I mean, trust me, I do have kits. I've got my earthquake kit. The biggest thing for us is water, because we're in a desert. And
oddly enough, that is the biggest thing in a hurricane kit as well, is water.
And the second thing is food. And now I actually have a stash of MREs that I keep here in the house, enough for my wife and for me for an entire month. One of the things my father did when he did his service in the Army is he was civil affairs, and he spent a lot of time going to other countries and helping them prepare for their disaster. He spent a lot of time in Papua New Guinea helping the government set up their disaster preparedness for volcano eruptions.
Oh, wow.
And one of the things he came back and said about California is if there's a major earthquake in Southern California, it could take up for a month to reach all the people and get them health and services. So you need to have your disaster kit prepared for an entire month.
Wow.
How long would you need for a hurricane?
A hurricane, I would say, depending on where you live, if you live in a rural area, you're going to need to prepare it for about at least 2 weeks. If you live in the city, like I live in the city, so I prepared my hurricane to last for 1 week. You don't know whenever you're going to get power back. My whole family lives along the Gulf Coast. I am the only one in my family with power. And whenever we finally ventured out and kind of drove around the city to see what was open, and this is what, we're a good 5 days past the hurricane now, and there are still, most of Houston doesn't have their power back on. No. We were kind of, I guess, lucky and unlucky. We had a downed power line, which is given priority after a hurricane because it's so dangerous. They fixed our stuff first. So I was one of the first neighborhoods to get power back up.
Now, why the discrepancy between rural and urban? Why is it 2 weeks for rural and 1 week for urban?
Well, the rural guys are going to be quite a bit more isolated. And out here, Texas is pretty flat, spread out. So when I say you live in the country, like my father lives in a rural area, and it would cost him so much more in gas to try to drive to one of these relief areas to get what he needs than it would for him to already have this stuff there on hand at his place, to where he can kind of hold his own for as long as he can until stuff starts coming back up within the city, and then bam, he can go to the city, he can get his gas, they can get their ice, they can get their water, that sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Good. Good. I mean, because here in the city, I already know it's proven true for this hurricane as well. We got our stuff back before anyone else. My father, my brother, my sister, they all live in these outlying areas, in these different towns along the Gulf Coast, and they have nothing. No power, no water. The only thing that my sister has going for is she's got natural gas, so she can cook. But of course, she doesn't have the other amenities like television, air conditioning, that sort of thing. So she ended up coming to my house.
Okay.
Which is fine. It's fine. I'm not complaining. I'll hear about it later.
No, it's good. I mean, we actually, in our family, we have a disaster plan where my parents have the largest house and they live in a canyon. So the plan is for everyone to get there because they have the most resources. They even in Los Angeles live at the start of the LA River. So they actually have a freshwater stream running through their backyard. So it's
that's what family's for, Alex. That is what family is for. Utilized during an emergency.
So it's, so we have a fallback plan. And something that I recommend for everything is, because, you know, after the last couple of earthquakes, the phone lines were down, but the one thing that we did have was actually our cell phones. How did the phones work out there for the hurricane? Which one was best?
Our landlines obviously went down right away because, most stuff is ours stuff is connected to the cable. And as soon as the power goes out, you're going to lose that phone too, for the most part. Our cell phones worked right up until we were getting ready to go to bed. This storm rolled in at night, and even after we lost service, if my call started failing, I could text message. So the family was text messaging each other. And here's another thing that we did, and I don't have handheld radios listed in my hurricane kit. What my husband and I did for the last hurricane and for this hurricane, and it worked out pretty well, is we took a handheld radio around our neighborhood on our street, because our street is like most neighborhoods in America, where we know each other, we're pretty tight. We gave everybody a radio. We all got on the same channel, and every couple of hours during the storm, we would just call and do a check. Hey, is everybody okay?
So it's not a handheld like news radio, but we're talking about like a CB.
Yeah, we're talking about just a little, one of those little, kind of like a walkie-talkie.
Okay. Like the little Motorola devices?
Yes, absolutely. But one thing you got to remember is the next day, you got to take those radios. Whenever the hurricane passed, you got to take those radios back because, man, the kids will be all over them.
Oh.
And you either never see them again, or they're going to be gumming up traffic, because what we learned is emergency services were actually monitoring every channel that they could, trying to find people who needed help, and you don't want your kids getting in the way of that.
Absolutely. It's a good call.
Yeah, absolutely. So you want me to go over my hurricane kit really fast?
Exactly. You read my mind.
Okay, great. All right. Well, in my hurricane kit, I keep at least 5 flashlights and 1 battery-powered lantern, and I'll go ahead and go over now why. I have candles in my hurricane kit, too. I keep about 10 candles. Some of them smell, some of them don't, because, you go to a candle party, you buy these smelly candles.
So it's not, this is just a normal candle. It's not one of these high wind candles or super long life candles that you can get for some of these emergency kits?
No. I'll buy whatever I can get my hands on, or whatever I've got around the house becomes part of my hurricane kit. But I don't use candles. And during this hurricane, I didn't light one candle. And I'll go ahead and explain why. In the summertime, with no air conditioning in your home, those candles are going to help heat up your house. And they're really not going to do you any favors. So I try and shy away from the candles. In my hurricane kit, I try to have enough batteries to rotate into my flashlights at least twice. And as I'll explain a little bit later, if you work it right, you're really not going to be using the flashlights and the candles too much anyway. If you do what you're supposed to do and follow your curfew and go to bed when you're supposed to go to bed, because there's really nothing to do after the sun goes down anyway. So anyway, I have aside from the flashlights and the battery-powered lantern, you have enough batteries to replace whatever you've got that's battery powered. You need to have enough batteries to replace that stuff twice. I didn't have to replace any of my batteries this hurricane, but I only lost power for what I want to say 2 days. We lost power, and on the third day, our power came back on. So I guess I'm going to have to change those batteries for the next hurricane, because I'm sure they'll run out pretty quickly. But anyway, I have canned goods in my hurricane kit. And this is what I do. I wait until a Kroger or some other grocery store has a 10 for $10 deal on ravioli.
Okay.
And I buy about 10 to 20 cans of them. And I stock my hurricane kit with that.
And so you're considering one can is one meal for one person?
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. But that ravioli is going to get real old really fast. Plus, people don't think about this. Anybody that's got a stocked freezer is going to start freaking out right after the hurricane, and everybody barbecues anyway. So you're not going to get into these canned goods for at least 3 to 4 days following the hurricane.
Absolutely. Actually, I have some in-laws that live on a farm in Kentucky. And during some of the ice storms the last couple of years, they actually lost power for 2 weeks because of the ice storms. And they were saying that they even took the frozen food out of their freezers and then buried it in the snow outside. And it still went bad after like 5 days. And they were really surprised. You'd think it would be buried in snow. It would last, you know, pretty much forever, like, you know, some of the mammoths they find in the Arctic. But apparently it was cold, but not cold enough to really keep things from spoiling. So they still had food spoiling buried in snow outside.
Wow. Well, so my suggestion, and I think we talked a little bit about this earlier, is to consider something more substantial, like MREs. And you can buy MREs for a few dollars each. I think I found them. I found them on the internet. I want to say $70 a case, but I found them on eBay for $2.99 a piece.
You would trust eBay for something like that?
Not really. Not really. Because those things last a really long time. You might be getting MREs that we phased out in the 80s.
Yeah. Yeah, the site that I mentioned in the quick tip, actiongear.com, sells different types of MREs, and that's where I got mine from.
You know what's interesting is Hormel, the food company, they sell prepackaged meals too, and they sell prepackaged kosher meals if you want them. So, and those are also about $3 a piece. So, so if you're looking for some sort of variety to put in your hurricane kit, that's not a bad option. But the MREs, I think, are really the best because, and you know, I'll tell you something else. I've been in the Army 17 years, so I used to give MREs away as Christmas presents.
What, instead of a lump of coal?
Well, you know, when I was quite a bit younger, I didn't have a lot of money, and you know, we'd go out on maneuvers, and you get three of these things a day, and I only eat one, so I would come back with a duffel bag with about 8 or 10 MREs in them, and people that aren't in the military think they're pretty cool, so I would give them away as a Christmas present, so I wouldn't have to buy anything. Is that awful?
No. And actually, MREs don't taste nearly as bad as people think. The new ones actually are really pretty good.
Yeah, they are. They are. They really are. And they give you a lot of food in them. You, if you were smart about it, you could really do, you could really make those last a long time.
In more ways than one.
Yeah, exactly. And everything inside of it, it's useful. You know, they give you instant coffee, and then they give you hot sauce, and they give you wipes, baby wipes, which is also part of, for later on, I'll mention those. But anyway.
That's new stuff. In fact, the MREs that I've seen recently, they used to give gum and toilet paper and things like that, but I think they removed some of that stuff from the most current MREs.
The ones that I have still have the gum.
Okay, but not the toilet paper?
Yes, they do have the toilet paper.
Okay. The civilian ones that I've bought don't have that in there. And I was like, did they pull them out of the military ones? Yeah. Well, that's probably later in your kit.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Whenever we went camping or did anything, it's always the important papers. You always bring the important papers with you.
That is actually next. So funny you mentioned that's next on my list. Paper products. At the beginning of hurricane, well, this is what happened to me last hurricane, is that as soon as I saw that there was a hurricane out there in the North Atlantic, I went out and I got a case of paper towels and a case of toilet paper. And I stuck them right on the top of my hurricane kit box in my closet. And then when the hurricane didn't hit us, I ended up using those paper products, so I had to go out and buy more for this hurricane. But I did the exact same thing. I didn't wait. We didn't wait until the day before the hurricane, too. But you definitely need to stock. I recommend a case of paper towels and a case of toilet paper because, man, you are going to blow through those paper towels like nobody's business. Basically, you're going to need picnic supplies, paper plates, cups, the plasticware to eat with, And if you want to go green, you can buy the paper stuff as opposed to the, you know, the styrofoam or the plastic stuff that's not very environmentally friendly.
Yeah, also the you can buy recycled paper products now. Although, from personal experience, I'm taking some of that stuff camping. The stuff that's, you know, biodegradable and things like that, that you can bury out in the middle of nowhere, not, you know, feel bad about it. It doesn't stand up so well on high wind. And that's my other recommendation from personal experience on certain paper products. Get the cheap stuff. It tends to hold up under high winds a lot better than the real nice soft stuff does.
I also recommend that you carry 2 to 3 bottles of 16-ounce bottles of hand sanitizer in your hurricane kit, because you put these near any sink, the bathrooms, or right out in the open where they can be easily seen and used by whomever wants to use them, because the water is going to run out. As soon as the city loses power, those water pumps shut off, you're going to lose water. And you still have to have a way to clean your hands after you go to the bathroom and whatnot. What's funny is psychologically, you still go to the sink to wash your hands even though there's no water there.
Oh, really?
You go into a room, and you probably know this from earthquakes, you go into a room, you still flip the light on, even though you don't have power.
Yeah. Yeah, you just reach for the light. It's that habit thing.
It's automatic. I also recommend that you keep one large bottle of bleach in the kit. I don't store mine with the kit. I store mine in the laundry room. But a large bottle of bleach, and you will also need a medicine dropper. Because after your water does come back on, or even if you have to go to some other source to get your water, you're going to need to be able to sanitize that. You're going to be able to sanitize things.
Yeah, absolutely. The water, when it comes back online, could be contaminated for at least 5 days, 3 to 5 days before they actually flush the system out.
That's exactly what happened here.
Yeah, it happens in earthquakes. We actually had a bad thing here in West Los Angeles once where something got contaminated, and there was no earthquake. It was just something happened. And they said, you know, boil your water, don't drink it, you know, take care of the stuff. And there was the warning was out for 3 days.
And I never actually had to use this before, but the website I found that was pretty helpful says you can decontaminate your water 16 drops of bleach per gallon to sanitize it in an emergency if you can't boil it.
Right, and the dropper, you want a glass dropper, I imagine, so that the Clorox does, or the bleach doesn't destroy it after a couple of uses.
I guess then you won't have a dropper anymore.
Yeah.
And also you need to remember that you have to allow 30 minutes of contact time to clean your water.
So that means put the dropper in, let it stir it, and let it sit for 30 minutes before using it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also, I have in my kit, and I don't keep this in the box. I keep this in the garage because it's just more convenient. The kids like to listen to the radio every once in a while. I keep a battery-powered radio, and the same thing, goes with the radio and the flashlights. Make sure you have enough batteries to change that sucker out twice. The radio lasts forever. I mean, it lasts a very long time before you're going to have to change those batteries out. But when you lose your television and your other means of communication, you feel very cut off. And having that radio to be able to listen to, just to know that other people are out there and going through the exact same thing that you are, to know that things are still moving along, that things are still organized, that you're not out of complete control of your situation is very important. It was just like a pioneer house in here. We're all sitting around watching the radio whenever we lost the television.
Like the good old days, like the early 1900s.
Exactly, exactly, like yesteryear.
Yeah, one little blow of the wind, and all of a sudden you're back 100 years.
Exactly, exactly. You didn't know how good you had it. The pioneers didn't have it so good. I considered a hand crank radio as well, and you can pick those up, I think, for about $30. You can also do a hand crank TV, but I think, after 2009, everything's going digital, and the TVs with the antennas aren't going to work anymore? Is that true?
Well, not exactly, because they're still going to have over-the-air broadcast, but it's an over-the-air digital broadcast versus an over-the-air analog broadcast.
Yeah, I don't think that the handheld stuff that you can get now addresses that issue.
Probably not. They're probably going to be some of the last people to convert, but they will eventually have to do it.
Yep. Along with a battery-powered radio, we also have a Coleman stove, and I keep 5 propane fuel cans, small ones, and this is what happened to us. We would forget that we had the propane fuel cans, and when a hurricane looked like it was going to hit us, we would go out and buy more. So I ended up with about 6 of them. That's silly me. So we ended up with about 6 of them, and I didn't know this, I was very nervous. One propane fuel can fed us very well, and we made coffee twice, and we made breakfast, and we made dinner. And so it lasted 24 hours, basically, before we had to change it out. So I was very, very happy with that. So that's a good rule of thumb, is that if you're feeding a family, which I had 10 people in my house, so one can per day.
Now, explain these cans to me. I mean, are they little canisters? Because I have a Coleman camping stove, mm-hmm. and it takes little fuel canisters.
Yeah, exactly.
They seem like they were wax rather than liquid protein or propane.
I don't actually know what they are. I know that they sell them next to the propane camp, the Coleman camp stove. My husband told me they were propane fuel cans, so.
Okay. I don't know what they're made of either, but it's a waxy substance versus a liquid or a gas that I'm used to, like the propane that I use for my barbecue.
To me, that was man work. I made him go out there and do that. I'm not messing with something that might explode on me. Thank you. It works really well. I was very pleased with our little stove. It fed all of us and also made us coffee, which I thought was more important than the food.
Yes.
We had to have that sense of normalcy. We ended up heating water to the point where it was just getting ready to boil, and then I poured it manually into the coffee filter, and I made coffee that way. My cousin and her family were here, and they swore to me that my coffee was better than the regular coffee. I think they just wanted me to make it again.
Yeah, sometimes the environment is enough to make it better.
Exactly.
A cold beer in the middle of the desert is the best thing you've ever had in your life. And it could be the worst beer in the world, and you never drink it at home. But in the middle of the desert, if it's cold, it's the best beer in the world.
I know exactly what that's like, sort of. But I've never been in the desert. I've listed a generator in my kit. I do not have a generator in my home, but I went ahead and listed it in my kit because this was notes that I made for my family. If you live in the city limits, I really don't recommend a generator that's not one that's gas-powered or gasoline-powered anyway. They're very noisy, and the gas stations run out of gas very quickly. And unless you're going to have, 10 or 15 gallons of fuel on hand on your property, which is kind of smelly and dangerous and toxic, to me, it's just not worth it. We had our neighbors ran a generator when we lost power, and they got exactly one day's worth of use out of it. I can go one day. I can go 1 to 2 days without power, and everything is going to be okay. I don't need the fallback on the generator. Now, if you have somebody with special needs in your home, like someone that's on a ventilator, or somebody who uses a CPAP or BiPAP machine at night, those are the masks that you wear at night to continually put air pressure into your airway to keep it open. People with sleep apnea use them. If you have somebody with special needs, then I would consider a generator. My father is in that category. They live in a rural area. He sleeps with a CPAP machine at night because he has sleep apnea. So they bought a generator. And I can't remember if he said he was going to apply through FEMA or if he was going to apply through his insurance company to get reimbursed for the cost of the generator, because it's a necessity for him.
Now, you bring up an interesting point about the noise. For somebody who hasn't been in a disaster, especially in the city, after the disaster happens, it is quiet like you have never heard in the city. There is no noise. There are no power lines buzzing. There's no traffic. There's no, because there's no power, there are no machines to generate noise. It is the eeriest thing. You know, I'm middle of Los Angeles. You know, it's not as quite as bad as New York, but it's loud. After the earthquake, nothing.
Wow.
It was like being in the middle of nowhere, and yet I'm standing in the block in the middle of the city. So that generator, I've been around portable generators. They are very noisy. That noise will carry, and it will bounce off all the buildings, and everyone in the neighborhood's going to know you're running a generator.
Yep. Absolutely. So also, oh my goodness, not everybody knows the safety precautions that go along with generators. We had a few people around here run their generator inside the home, and at least one kid, or at least one child, died of asphyxiation.
That's carbon monoxide. That's horrible.
It is.
But it gives off the same type of exhaust like your car does. So it's like like running your car inside your house.
Yes. Yes. I couldn't even imagine having a generator inside my house and having it be that noisy. But I'll go ahead and move on. Also, in my hurricane kit, I have a first aid kit. And this is nothing more than a first aid kit than you would have in your home normally, or that you would carry in your car. Things that, you know, something to be able to disinfect wounds and to bandage them up and that sort of thing. So real easy first aid kit.
So you're talking about like something that you would buy, like a family first aid kit from,
yes,
from Red Cross. Nothing special. Yes. Nothing that you've put together with your experience as a medic with anything.
No. Really, as an Army medic, I was taught to think outside the box as far as medicine, because we would be in the areas where we would be isolated and we didn't have all the fancy equipment, so we had to think on our feet. And so for me, that's what I would do here if the need ever came up. You know, Lincoln Logs for that belong to kids don't become Lincoln Logs anymore. They become splints.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So also in my kit, I have galvanized trash bags, a box of galvanized trash bags. The stronger ones, the ones that will hold sharp objects like glass, or whenever you go to chop up felled limbs and that sort of thing, you're going to need a place to put, and the trash just gets blown around. Anything that you left in your yard, which I'll talk about later, becomes a missile. And it becomes a hazard, and the stuff just is everywhere after a hurricane.
Yeah, stuff that may have been in your neighbor's yard down the block may appear in your backyard now.
Exactly. And some of this stuff is just trash. It has to be thrown away. So we use the larger trash bags, and even after a hurricane, your trash fills up fast. It really does. And it, because you have more, well, I had 10 people in my house, so I'm pretty sure our garbage was producing its own garbage. I couldn't keep up with it.
Self-replicating garbage.
Yes, absolutely.
And also, your trash cans may not be around anymore. They may have been blown, you know, halfway to Dakota.
Trash cans, lawn chairs, and people don't really think about this, but the shingles from your roof blow off and they become missiles. And they'll fly through the air, and they'll end up breaking windows or damaging property or whatever, and then you come out the next day and you find shingles just everywhere. They don't always belong to you. The last part of my hurricane kit that I keep on hand, I keep water. And I use a 1 gallon per person per day rule.
That's
but
a good
I have
rule.
Absolutely nothing to base that off of.
Well, we use that here in the desert.
Oh, good. So I was doing the right thing then. Water is the most important commodity during and after the storm. Water is going to be the thing that you're going to miss most of all, even over electricity. It will keep you alive and happy during your power outage. It will run out very, very fast if you don't have enough of it and if you don't pay attention to how you use it. So you're not always going to be just drinking it. You're going to be brushing your teeth. You're going to be washing your hands. You're going to be rinsing out your cook pot. Or, you know, every once in a while, you're going to want to wash yourself off with it. So anyway, I already said I use a 1 gallon per person per day rule of thumb for that. And I have a family of four, so I want to say I had about 10 gallons of water starting out. I didn't expect that I was going to have more people show up at my house. It seems like I should start planning for that. Every hurricane, people show up at my house.
That's a very good point, is that you may not, because you may plan for your particular family, but the neighbors next door may not have planned so well. So you may have guests, family or even neighbors that may need help, and they will, you know, tap into your supplies.
Yes, they will.
It's not like you're going to sit up there on your roof with a rifle and keep them at bay. They're your neighbors.
Oh, well, the one thing my husband and I have to regret during this storm is the fact that we waited too long to buy ice. So from my lessons learned for the future, as soon as the hurricane is out there looking at you funny, go buy ice.
Why is ice important?
Ice is so important. Ice is important for the morale of your family, because drinking hot water sucks. Ice is important to keep whatever food that you have in the refrigerator after your power goes down, after you've lost, the temperature starts to drop in there. It's to keep your milk fresh as long as possible before you have to start tapping into your reserve. I'll talk about that in a little bit. Ice, it's for us, it was almost like a psychological comfort to be able to have that control over our environment and keep things cold that we needed to keep cold, like our water, like our juices, like our perishable stuff that we wanted to use later, like sandwich meat and the stuff from the refrigerator that we really didn't want to lose right away, like the milk. And that was a huge deal, because the trucks don't come back to start delivering things for about a week. So you're going to be going without those anemones. And we wanted to make our anemones last. So for us, ice was a big, big deal.
Now, the trucks you're talking about aren't the disaster relief trucks. You're talking about the trucks coming in.
Stock
the grocery stores. Okay.
Absolutely. My cousin lives closer to the coast than I do. And as soon as her family weathered the storm with me. As soon as they went back to their home, the National Guard was already there, passing out ice and water and MREs. I thought that was pretty cool. She said that they were so well organized, and she was so happy with the operation that they had going. There was this very, very long line of cars waiting in line for ice and water, but she said they were so well organized, they didn't spend 10 minutes in that line before they had their stuff and they were on their way.
That's really good to hear.
That's really, really good. She said, don't listen to anything negative that you see. She says, I'm seeing lots and lots of good stuff around here, and they still don't have power. But anyway, I went off on a tangent about ice.
No, it's important.
Well, that's because we didn't have it. Now I'm still talking about it because I'm still missing it, and I have my power back on now. But this is what we did. My husband and I had about 36 bottles of 16-ounce bottles of water that we had collected, and we put those in the freezer. And we froze those, and those became our ice. And so whenever I lost power in my refrigerator, I actually moved a frozen gallon jug of water over into the refrigerator to help keep the temperature in there a little cooler. And all the ice that I had in my refrigerator, all the frozen water bottles that I had in my freezer didn't melt, because they were close together and the freezer stayed cold. We ended up having to cook about 6 steaks, and I think I made hamburger helper with my last package of ground turkey. But other than that, the freezer stayed cold because of my water bottles. And then I was able to just go in and I would take those frozen water bottles and I put them in my cooler to keep everything that was in my cooler nice and chilly. That way it would... Anyway, I'll get into that next with kid strategies, because the kids are going to drive you crazy.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, they will.
But that's
I got to finish up about water first, because this is so important. This is what we did. We caulked our bathtubs, the drains, so that they wouldn't lose the water. And we filled those bathtubs up with water. And if you have a swimming pool, that's even better. But, you know, not everybody has a swimming pool. We don't have a swimming pool. We just filled our bathtubs up with water.
What about with a pool? Though I'm concerned about the pool because of splashing, contamination, and stuff being thrown in it. Would the pool still be a viable water source?
I wouldn't drink the water from the pool.
Okay.
This is what you fill the water. You fill the water, the bathtubs with water, so you can flush your toilets. And so that you can have a little bit of water to bathe in, to wash your hands, to take a little bit of water and wash your cook pot out with.
Okay, so you move the water from the bathtub into the container above the toilet so that when you flush, there's something to push the stuff out?
No, we didn't do that. This is what I did because, you know, almost every bathroom has the smaller garbage pails. I just washed those out really good, and I would fill them up. You need maybe 2 gallons of water, or maybe a gallon and a half of water in those buckets to pour. After you go to the bathroom, you pour that water really fast into the toilet, and it flushes.
Oh, okay. So you did the direct method. You just opened up the lid and just poured it down afterwards.
Yeah, I didn't know you could put it in the back.
That's where it fills.
Sounds like work. I guess that would be a viable option too. You could do that as well, but for us, it was just easier to dump the water in there, and that worked out pretty well. But if you aren't smart about that, you'll run out fast. And I also have a note about that because if somebody in your house is sick, like if they have diarrhea or something like that, you're going to be in a water crunch situation really, really quickly. I don't think we could have lasted another 2 days with 10 people in my home.
Yeah.
With just 2 bathtubs full of water. I don't think we could have done it. I think we would have been in a bathroom crisis situation. So my cousin had this great idea because even after the hurricane, you get all this residual rain and it rains. Oh, it rained for 2 days afterward. You can also use buckets to catch rainwater to flush your toilets.
Ah, good idea.
And I hadn't even thought of that. So, and as far as water, someone asked me, what could I use what if I don't have water bottles? What if I don't have this? What if I don't have that? You've absolutely got to think outside the box. Anything that holds water that you can use is useful, like freezer bags. Would you have ever thought of using freezer bags to put water in to keep stuff in your freezer cold or to keep stuff in your cooler cold? Never would have thought of that. Somebody else gave me that idea.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to use it now that I'm going to use it, and I'm going to pretend it was my own idea. So, all right. So now I'm done with water. I'll move on to children because we had 5 kids in the house.
Well, that concludes the first part of the interview and discussion with Bonnie Gage. We had so much material that I actually had to split the episode into 2 different parts. So, in the next episode, episode 31, we will continue and complete the discussion. But for the time being, that concludes this episode. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you'd like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexhaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.